Hey, y'all, it's Charlie Robinson, and you're listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
Well, I got ties to show, a backbone made of silver. Well, I got Willie playing on my radio.
All right, Cable Smith welcoming everybody into another episode of Campfire Conversations here on SCI's Lone Star Outdoor Show. This is the 52nd installment, I do believe, and today we've got a great guest lined up for you in the form of SCI's Executive Vice President of Government Affairs, our good friend Ben Cassidy. And we've got some very important issues to get into today. Trophy hunting import bans coming out of New York and SCI's role in thwarting their ill-advised attempt at modern-day colonialism. We'll also get into the ESA, the Endangered Species Act, something that I think every conservationist initially celebrated. But the bottom line is it's been hijacked and it no longer serves the purpose for which it was intended back in the 70s. So interesting stuff there relating to the ESA, and then how does the America's Wildlife Habitat Conservation Act factor into the dynamic between states and the feds trying to come together to manage wildlife that exists in said state. There's always a conflict there, but this act could help, well, massage that relationship. And then if you're not familiar with SCI's Hunter's Embassy, we're going to touch on that today as well. So without further ado, let's get this party started. It's my pleasure to welcome Ben Cassidy back to the show.
Great to be back, Cable. How we doing?
Well, we are rocking and rolling. I am excited. I'm leaving for Argentina next week.
Nice.
For a
red stag. You're doing down there. Nice.
Red stag, yeah.
That'd be awesome.
I'm not knocking anyone that goes down there to hunt dove, but I'm more.
That's not you.
Well, no, I mean, I shoot 15 dove in Texas in September, and I'm like, man, that was really good. Shooting 1,000 of them, not really my thing. But the guy, he was like, now, I don't want you to think that you're going to Cordoba, but you could shoot like 500 in an afternoon if you wanted to.
If you so choose.
Like, I mean, that sounds good. Like 500. Okay, I could do that. But like shooting a couple thousand in a day. And there's dudes that like, you know, they get plaques and stuff. I shot 3,000 dove in a day. I mean, my shoulder would fall off, I think.
I'd have it in me. I went down to Argentina a while back on a hunt that I bought at the DC SCI chapter. Uh-huh. And I went down to hunt dove, but I stayed to fish golden Dorado. Like,
oh,
that
nice.
Was epic and awesome. So it was cast and blast. And the first day I only shot all day. And then the outfitter was like, you know, you should try out some of the fishing. I was like, sure, we'll get to it, I guess. So the next morning we shot again, siesta, ate a bunch of like, you know, beef. And then in the afternoon, I was like, yeah, let's try the fishing out. And then for the rest of the trip, we're just fishing. I'm just really upset the outfitter because he's like, you know, we really like when you pull the trigger here.
Yeah, we like to sell those shells to you.
Yeah.
How was the golden Dorado fishing? That's one that my dad is not a hunter. He loves fishing. That's one I want to take him to do, I think, before he's too old to actually go, you know, do an international fishing trip.
So I was with my dad, and I mean, it was amazing on the Paraná River. You know, we went out prior out there for 30 minutes, cast it out, got a bite, fish jumped 3 times, then it's like steel lip just kicked out the hook, and I was just on it. I was like, okay, let's get one of these. So then like kept going after him, brought a few to boat. It was really cool, just gorgeous fish, obviously. Just
that's super cool. And you think like a lot of trout species have been introduced all over the world. Like I know they have rainbow trout in parts of South America and Argentina and stuff that they've introduced there. The golden Dorado is like the native fish.
Sure.
And beautiful. Obviously you've caught one.
Yeah.
What did it actually look like? What was it like holding it in your hands?
I mean, they're hefty little pigs. The tail's incredible. You know, it has like the dots on it. Just, you know, iridescence like changes in the light, but red belly, yellow backs, just like awesome big old salmonoid kind of mouth. It's awesome.
How do they fight?
Tough as hell. Like, and again, like their mouth is just like, they're like jaws from James Bond, the bad guy with the metal mouth. They're just like, it's hard to hook them in, and they'll do the multiple jumps to just try to kick it loose. Very cool.
Awesome. But yeah, so I also booked the I booked that trip at the 2022 SCI show.
About time.
Yeah. Got well, you know, a lot of these things you got to book out years in advance.
Of course.
But the cool thing was is that I was able to vet every Red Stag outfitter, you know, over the course of 4 days in Argentina. And you know, you could go high fence, you could go free range, you could go to Patagonia and go more for the mountains or whatever. And so I was, you know, and you're talking to your buddies and you're trying to put a group together and you just got to find the right fit. So found one that's free range, but still has, you know, chance at a 320, 330 inch bull. Now some places are like, yeah, you might shoot a 270. I'm like, okay, yep. Well, maybe that's not the hunt for some people. For me, it wasn't. I was like, I want to, I'm not looking for a 400 inch bull, but I want, you know, something like a 6x6 elk, right? Put it Heck in perspective, yeah. Something yep. Nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, but then he was like, but oh, yeah, you can dove hunt, but just only 400 or 500 in a day.
Hate to limit you.
Well, you can only shoot 15 where I'm from, so that sounds good.
I don't remember the numbers in the roost where we were. They're like, don't worry about it. We got 14 million of them here. You'll never dent the population. It's like, okay.
But that's the thing people have to understand is they're a nuisance there.
Yep.
So you'd say, well, how can you call yourself a conservationist if you just went out and blasted 2,000 dove in a day? Well, I'm doing the farmers a favor. Like, they don't want them here. They wish I would shoot 2,000 more.
Yep.
So.
And my cousin Ted, I mean, he probably ate 50 dove a night, so he's a conservationist. <you know? laughs> He did his part.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to certainly the hunting and then the you know, Argentina is known for red wine and beef.
Oh yeah. So. And the sausage, so good. They're just masters of the fire.
Yeah.
Masters of the wine.
Well, I'm stoked about it. So, but just another reason to go to the SCI show because you're going to see outfitters from all over the world. And if you've honed in on a hunt that you want to do, like I was dead set on going to Argentina for Red Stag, then there's going to be 10 of them there that can, you know,
yep.
Offer you something that you're looking for.
Hardest part is making your decision, right?
100%. Yeah. Well, I've got some stuff to get into here with you, but first, what about your upcoming trips for this year? Have you booked anything? Do you have anything for 2024 that's at the top of things you're looking forward to?
I always got something to look forward to. I mean, a lot of this time of year, just busy work, travel, still trying to figure out where to go for a turkey before that game's over. I'm going to Portugal next week for some hunting meetings, which would be good. Just working on setting up, you know, different groups with some of the other hunting organizations to have more like a united voice around what we're doing, just given all the fights over there.
Will and Face then, be there?
Yeah, Face will be there for sure. Yeah. Okay. I don't go to Europe unless Face is there.
Right. I figured. Yeah. So I taped a conversation with Tristan Breyer.
Yeah.
When we were at the SCI show this year.
Awesome. Yeah.
And, you know, I've always heard about Face and, but to actually have someone that's front and center there, he's a policy advisor there.
Yep.
You know, kind of break it down for you and tell you, say, these are some of the issues we're really focused on. I can read a newsletter until I'm blue in the face, but to sit down and have a conversation with him and then, I forgot his name, Dr. I won't remember his name, but he was telling me some of the stuff they're doing with the black cock, which is like a grouse, basically.
The black grouse in Switzerland. Yeah.
Yeah. In Switzerland. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I went over there last summer and saw the project. It's amazing. Mm. And a really beautiful bird. That was probably with Dr. Stad.
Maybe he's a surgeon.
Yeah. Dr. Miguel Stad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the chairman of our European committee. He's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he was saying we bought some goats to help with the vegetation, and then the wolves started eating the goats. I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Y'all have wolf problems over there? He's like, oh yeah, man. Like, why do you have wolf problems? Oh, because we protected them, and now we can't deal with them.
Hey, that sounds familiar. Right. Yeah, the thing with like Europe is like you could blindfold me, put me in Brussels, and put me in one of these conversations about, you know, the problems they're having, and be like wolves, lead, bears. It's like, okay, like, uh-huh. Why did I fly across the ocean to hear this? Like, we have the same problems going on.
I saw the other day, I just saw a headline, not from a hunting-related entity, but this grizzly bear had attacked 9 people, I think, in Slovakia or Slovenia or something. They just killed it. It killed a woman, but it attacked 9 people. It's like, and he also mentioned, there are a lot of areas of Europe have big bear problems right now.
Oh yeah. Well, there was the president of the EU, the last one, from Germany. She had like a show pony, and a wolf killed it. She was a big horse rider, and that like totally changed her mind on the whole issue.
Is that Ursula?
Yeah, Ursula.
Yeah,
Queen Ursula.
Yeah. I remember hearing about that.
But yeah, I'm gonna go over there, and then I'm going to Tanzania. I haven't dialed in what's gonna happen there. It's for work, but I've got to be able to just take some vacation on the back end and get out in the field.
So, in your travels, and I know a lot of it is, work oriented with maybe a few days of hunting or whatever on the back end. How many countries have you actually hunted in Africa?
I've actually only hunted South Africa to date. And I did that, as a vacation after I went to Mozambique for some meetings.
So you've been to Mozambique, obviously South Africa. You've been to Tanzania. What other countries have you been to over there?
That's it. That's been my trips. I mean, so I started at SCI in 2019, then went right into COVID. Nobody did any work travel. And then as soon as I could get out, went over there. I got a lot to explore, man.
I'm jealous. Tanzania is up there for me.
Like, yeah.
Less explored part of Africa. Still got a little bit of that dark,
danger,
mysterious, stigma attached to it. I want to see if it's real or not. Yeah,
exactly. I'll report back if I come back, right?
I want to talk about the ESA and this America's Wildlife Habitat Conservation Act.
Yep.
And I saw the video. You're visiting with was it a congressman or a senator?
So it's Congressman Bruce Westerman. He's the chairman, the top dog for the Natural Resources Committee.
Mm-hmm. And I know part of it is related to this America's Wildlife Habitat Conservation Act. And then one of the slides SCI put out, the ESA, the Endangered Species Act, was established in the 70s. Only 3% of species that have been listed actually are delisted.
Yep.
That's a problem.
Yeah, it's a broken law that's really been weaponized, and courts really hold it up and prevent it from doing what it's supposed to. Mm-hmm. Well, I was liking it to the Eagles song "Hotel California." Animals can check out anytime they want; but they can never leave, right?
Right.
And it's like we should be just out there, full throated, looking for chances to celebrate. When a species is delisted,
right?
Like when the wolf was delisted in 2020, but then anti-groups come in, lawsuits are filed, and that throws it back into limbo where basically the animal's still on the list and federally protected. It's like such a disservice to a lot of this species, the way it works, because part of what the ESA enforces is you take the species of those greatest needs out of local management, the folks that are living with these animals,
right?
Put it under federal protections. Basically, you end up having decisions on what's best for the animals coming from people that are in Washington, D.C. And I can talk about it that way because I'm talking to you from Washington, D.C.
Right.
So I just find that kind of, a paradox in itself.
We'll extrapolate what we saw in the news this week, where the president of Botswana is saying, I'm going to ship Germany 20,000 elephants and see how they like it, because Germany has, I guess, implemented some kind of, some kind of trophy ban or something. Well, it's like, okay, this is modern day colonialism. Or out of New York this week. Just, it hasn't passed yet, but I think it passed the House this week.
It passed the Senate yesterday. Senate, a trophy bill, a trophy ban bill for
Big
New
Five
York.
Plus giraffe.
Yeah, which, I don't want to speak for our lawyers, but they're just biting at the chomp now to sue. Because we've been able to do it with the same bills before. It's a state preempting what federal law already has. Federal law, ESA, everything already, allows these animals to be imported. So it just happens that there's one state, that's, hell bent and has an anti-hunting, majority is going to try to ban it. We, tried to do it in New Jersey. SCI sued. They reversed it in court, wasn't allowed. You can still import into New Jersey. California under Jerry Brown, you know, passed it through their assembly and Senate, went to his desk. He vetoed it, not because he likes hunting, but because he saw what happened in New Jersey. Not going to waste his time on it. Connecticut was considering it. We put out the threat there saying, you know, do what Jerry Brown did. Don't do what, you know, Jersey did. They dropped it. Now New York's moving forward with it. You know, so it's left the Senate. It's going to the assembly. Not saying that the assembly is any better set up. But we, you know, we're going to keep repeating, like, you know, don't make us do this sort of approach to it.
If we just didn't do the charade.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's what's better for the species. Like, it just goes back, like, there are, I mean, ESA was done for the right reasons, right? But the road to hell is, you know, paved with good intentions. But it was all the right reasons. And there are animals that do need to have extra care and protection. The problem is when you have animals recover, you don't delist them, you don't celebrate that, then you drain all those funds. And that really goes towards charismatics, you know, the big fluffy, the ones that look good as like stuffed animals that get all the attention. Once you're taking care of them, you're forgetting about the non-charismatics that we're actually, you know, at risk of losing.
Yeah.
So it's like, but to that token, you know, we talk about the 3%. I do want to take a minute to celebrate yesterday, not the trophy ban, you know, going through New York, but what happened in Louisiana with the black bear, right?
Oh, yeah.
There hasn't been a hunting season on black bear since the 80s. The black bear in Louisiana was on the Endangered Species Act. It's recovered. The other side sued to put it back on the list. SCI was the only ones to intervene. Two times on the merits of our arguments, we upheld the delisting, like our arguments helped to uphold the delisting. So then it went over to the management authority, to the Louisiana, Game and Fish, where they put together their plan and their proposal to have it managed by the state, which included as a key piece hunting. And yesterday it passed. So, I mean, just a huge win there and just an example of, you know, how it really should work. And again, like that still took probably longer than it needed to. It did, but it can be done.
Yeah. Well, we actually got a really good backstory on that Louisiana season from Maria Davidson.
Yeah, cool.
At the convention.
Nope. And nobody better to tell you.
And one of her landowners that she'd worked with for like 15 years. It was actually the son of a landowner, and he was there. And just talking about like growing up with the bears, and he doesn't personally know if he'll shoot one because they're kind of, they're kind of just part of the landscape on their property. And he like knows which bear's which and where they hang out and stuff. So he's like, I might be too emotionally attached, but someone else can shoot one. You know, I don't, you know,
started naming them.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
We got one of the guys in our office on our team tipped in his fiance's father has a place right at that river basin. So we're all just trying to, you know, be really nice to Tipton right now.
Yeah. Well, say, I mean, if they give out non-resident tags or not, it'll be interesting to see how that.
Yeah. I haven't seen the structure. Exactly.
But the grizzly bear was one of the first species placed on the ESA in the 70s and it's still on there.
Yep.
And we had, Wyoming. It's been 6 or 7 years now. Biologist said we need to have a season. They even drew the hunters' names. They had the lottery. They drew the tags. And then some idiot judge was like, nah, we're not doing that.
Yep.
After it was all set up and everything. And that's just an example of it, you know, it's been hijacked. We're not celebrating that the grizzlies recovered. Instead, we're throwing a tantrum because it makes us feel bad that part of the celebration means that there's there's a sustainable population and now a few people might get to hunt one.
Yep.
So
yeah, it's a control thing, you know. It's a way of through the species being able to lock up land to shut it down, an opportunity.
Yeah, and you don't think about stuff like that. I think it was the wolverine recently came to my attention in, I forget where it was, but it was like on their fringe habitat. And they were talking about reintroducing them. And everyone's like, that would be cool if we had wolverines back in this area. Okay, yeah. Except for now they're going to say, okay, no hunting, certainly no trapping there, because what if a wolverine accidentally got caught in your trap. And so no real sustainable use utilization of the land that you and I own, right?
Yep.
So then you have to be like, well, maybe that isn't such a good thing.
It locks it up.
Yeah. Okay, so that America's Wildlife Habitat Conservation Act is what exactly?
So I would say, you know, the biggest tenet to it is it has money that is already in existence that goes from the federal government to the states, so the states are able to implement their state management plans. Okay. Right now, there's a funding gap that doesn't allow the states to actually have their management plans. So it's recognizing that the states, the ones on the ground, are the ones that are best suited to manage. And that's the case, making sure that they have, you know, the means necessary to do it. And with that, you're able to take care of habitat, manage it, and make sure that species aren't going on to the endangered species list.
So to preempt it, not to get them off, just to say it's better if we don't. And it is better, right? Because
yeah,
that worst case scenario is you have to go on the endangered species list. That means you're not doing so hot as a species.
Exactly.
Okay, so this is to preempt that. All right.
And then it also, so with these strengthened management plans, it turns over some of the keys on recovery of species that are already listed as well. So these plans are done in conjunction with the federal government, showing that they have a plan with regular check-ins to get a species towards recovery. So as they're getting towards recovery, states are rewarded with more of the onus and ability to take care and manage these species through the means that they deem necessary.
And so where does this thing sit currently?
So I don't know like the exact kind of like co-sponsoring, but it's been introduced. It's Chairman Westerman's bill. You know, the chairman doesn't really introduce many bills, but this is, you know, top priority. It's been introduced. It has Republican co-sponsors on it now, no Democrat co-sponsors as of yet, and it's received a hearing. So it's at a committee. It just needs to get more support as co-sponsors so we can see it go to the floor.
Okay. Well, I'm sure I'll get an email update when there's more on that.
Yeah.
Which is just one of the perks of joining SCI for as little as $65 a year, by the way. You can get Ben's emails and he'll tell you exactly what is of major concern and then other things we're looking at. And sometimes it's good news. Sometimes it's, you know, stuff that is like, oh man, this sucks. We got to really pay attention to this. And how can we get involved to let our voices collectively be heard? What about the Hunter's Embassy? What is that exactly? It might be where you're sitting right now. I don't know. I always just say I'm going to talk to Ben. He's in D.C. somewhere, you know. But it sounds cool that we have an embassy, right?
Who doesn't want an embassy? We have a Hunter's Embassy, finally, about time. In a town full of embassies, the Hunters have one now. it's our headquarters, our global headquarters, located in D.C. So we're on the Senate side, so the north side of the Capitol, but really just steps away from the Senate office buildings, you know, where you can pop in, talk with folks. But I mean, it's really, I would say, a nerve center for everything that goes on within the hunting community. You know, we have constant traffic come through, host a lot of like policy roundtables where we'll have, you know, a U.S. senator come in, and then we invite in all the different representatives from other hunting groups, fishing groups, just kind of talk about what the issues are of the day, look for ways forward. We host what we call lunch and learns, where we have House staff, Senate staff, bicameral, you know, Dem Republican, come over and have, you know, one of our biologists from the foundation teach. Like our last one was predator management, just talking about the issue. You know, you may hear about it as being some big evil thing. Look at all these bills that are on the Hill trying to shut it down, but here's what it really is. Here's how it's management. Here's what the states think about it. So that's a really good chance to, you know, get in front of and talk with a lot of, you know, the younger staff on the Hill who make a lot of the, you know, real decisions at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And then we do receptions. You know, I love bringing people together. So we'll have them with, you know, staff, folks from the embassies, ambassadors, members of Congress. And those are just good. Those are informal, but really just kind of you end up having some really good conversations, get some ideas out of it. kind of move from there. But that's all, you know, thanks to all the help that we got in from our members to set this building up as the embassy. You know, we got a great member, members, Armin and Mary Brockman from Minnesota, that really planted a flag for us. And then our within SCI, we have some very active members, the Life Hunter Advocate Society, that's really stepped up and helped us, you know, pull all this off.
So it's a own building.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a beautiful, like kind of like triple townhouse. That's like, you know, in this sweet old 1900 neighborhood. Come over to it anytime. Seriously, doors awesome. Open.
That's awesome. Okay. Very cool. And it's SCI's alone, or do we share it with other conservation organizations?
I mean, no, it's SCI's building, you know, it's like where my office is, where I am right now talking to you. But we try to have all these events and opportunities where we can open the door to folks. I mean, I think we're uniquely positioned with SCI, so I'd like to share what we've got. But I will say, if there are folks that do want to check it out, on May 9th, we're having our lobby day. We do it every year. It's open to all members of SCI, where we can check out the building. We also spend the day of the 9th, it's a Thursday, going and meeting with all different members of Congress in the House and the Senate. And we've got info. I'll get it over to you. I don't have it in front of me for the URL on our site, but there's a spot where folks can sign up. And we do have a competition going to host and sponsor one young hunting SCI member to be paid for flight and boarding to take part in it. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah, one cool thing, and I would say this has changed a little bit in the 15 years I've been doing this, it seems like hunting nonprofits are more apt to work with each other now than they used to be. And I think it was every man for themselves. Like, join our organization. We want your money. I think we've realized that we're stronger when we partner with other entities on certain things. And so what are a few other ones that more often than not, it's like SCI, and then you see this group and this group, and they're all pulling their resources together, trying to help, you know, help the greater good as a hunting and outdoor community, shooting community too sometimes.
Yeah, no. I want to speak to that real quick.
I want to say, give your money to SCI first, but also.
Yeah. No, but on that, like, this is one that's like near and dear to my heart. And I think about it a lot, actually. And I get it from like, you know, a different generation that always sees it through the prism of like, as a community, we're more divided than we've ever been. We're always infighting, and somebody needs to rise up and be like the big boy and bring everyone together. I think that that's the wrong approach, even when talking about the community. I think the right approach is asking the question, what are you doing to bring folks together? What are you doing to not be divided and to unite? I think that that's one example. It's just like the roundtables we have. Like, again, like, we've been around for a long time. We have a lot of relationship at SCI. So we've got, you know, yeah, relationships, like opportunities to bring people in. So members of Congress, like, we don't have a problem like having them over. So I want to share that, right, and that opportunity. And I want everyone to have a seat at the table. So at those roundtables, you know, when we're having folks over, it's NRA, it's RMEF, it's American Sport Fishing Association, it's Delta, it's Ducks Unlimited, it's all those groups coming in. And we all have equal time, equal stake at the table, you know, to hear what everyone's issues are. Like, end of the day, like, I expect like Ducks Unlimited, and I know they are, to be like the better expert on like NACA, you know, like North American wetlands.
Right.
So have them in the room, have them speak to it. I know that it all interplays, it's all interlocked and gives the foundation for what we're all fighting on. And what I see is a community that's responsive to that and wants to be a part of it. You know, like, we all realize that we are a minority in terms of being hunters.
Now, yeah, 6% of the population or something,
right,
like that.
I mean, it's dropping the bucket. But I've also like seen that, you know, when we come together, we all speak as one voice, like, we get things done. We also happen to, even if we're 6%, we're spread out and in every single corner of the country, right? Mm-hmm. And have our, and if we all speak together, then we're heard on it, and it makes all the difference in the world. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm also a big fan of Sportsman's Alliance. I think they do a lot of great
work too. I think Sportsman's Alliance is awesome. Don't have, you know, somebody that's full-time in D.C., but, if, you know, Todd or Mike Jean or any of them, Evan, are ever in town, come over, right? Yeah, yeah. They do great. because you know they understand the way that SCI does, that it's a battle that's fought on a number of fronts. You can't just play it one way. You've got to get the message out. You got to throw punches. I appreciate them greatly.
Yeah. Well, and I, like I said, I'm proud of us kind of putting our egos aside and saying, let's work together. Not that we never did that in the past, but it just seems like it's that mindset's shifted a little bit in the right direction, I think. So
it's good to hear from you. Yeah, because I agree.
And SCI is instrumental in that. I mean, because SCI has, it's been around for, let's just say, the longest, and it has a lot of resources that some of the other ones don't have. And it'd be easy to just say, no, we're good. We're SCI. We're going to rest on our laurels. We'll do it ourselves. But I think there's room at the table for everybody.
We also at SCI, I mean, we've got the most audacious, and that's why I love us, you know, motto. It's first for hunters, right? It's not first for bear hunters, elk hunters, lion hunters, whatever it is. It's first for hunters.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I want to work with all hunters then, you know?
I still get pissed when I see hunters, and this happened the other day, sometimes – I don't know. I think, we all need to realize there's ethics involved in our outdoor pursuits, right? We need to hold ourselves to a high level of ethics. Unlike, I think what got me thinking about this was the dude that ran the wolf down and then taped its mouth shut and then took it into the bar.
Yep.
Personally, I don't care if you do that 50 years ago. But social media didn't exist 50 years ago. Now everyone has seen, nobody would have seen that 50 years ago. It would have been a story that went down in local lore, right? But now, I mean, probably running down something with a snow machine isn't for me, right, to begin with.
Yep.
But the fallout is, it's like the Cecil the Lion thing. Well, that wasn't even an unethical deal. But look what it did for us. It set us back. And this is, even though this wasn't a hunting related thing, that's the first. All the headlines are.
Yep.
You know, hunter does this. Hunter. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. That's not hunting. That's not what we're about. But
I will say the credit to the hunting community, unlike with like the Cecil the Lion thing, went way out of control, way out of proportion. With at least this one, I hate what the guy did, horrible. But at least there was the conversation to it that allowed hunters to then come into it and say, whoa, 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 let me explain, you know, what we stand for actually and why we abhor this. And I think that it's actually given us an opportunity, because of conversation that's jumped beyond just our bubble to the general, you know, mind to be able to talk about hunting.
Yeah.
Not lay that to waste.
But you said first for hunters. That's our motto.
Yeah.
Going back to what I was saying, like, I feel like there are too many folks still within the hunting community, and maybe there always will be. I hope we're trending in the right direction. But, and I always say this, the I'm a hunter but crowd. There's no but. I'm a hunter. Therefore, hey, I know in Louisiana, you guys run deer with dogs. We don't do that in my state. And so it's foreign to me. I'm probably never going to do it. But, hey, that's part of your culture and it's legal. I respect your right to do that. And I'll fight for your right to do that.
Totally.
Right? And you've said it on the show before. It's the death by 1,000 paper cuts. When you start nitpicking and say, you know, I'm a hunter. I like to go mule deer hunting every year. But I don't really think we should be trapping wolves. Like, they should get a free pass because wolves are so cool. Like, no, there's no but. Are you in or are you out?
Totally.
So these people are like, we still need gatekeepers. Well, yes, we need gatekeepers on ethics, right? And like, that's like the wolf thing, unethical with what happened in Wyoming. But ethical hunting should be something that you should support regardless. And so I don't get these people that still nitpick and say, well, no, you know, or this trap's unethical, or, you know, apex predators, you don't need to hunt mountain lions. Well, why not? Well, just mountain lions are cool. You know, you don't need to hunt a mountain lion. You're not on my team at that point. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
And it's also just missing the general plan that, you know, anti-hunters have. You look at it like on a global scale, like look good at like Australia, where ducks and banning duck hunting is like the focus, right? You go to North America, you think that's ridiculous. But all I see it as is you see like these rules or regs come out, like this one with elephants, you know, it's Mad Libs. You have elephant on it today And tomorrow you switch it out for mule deer, you know, and the next day is for ducks. Like the other side doesn't like, they go for the path of least resistance, for the easiest thing to do, the lowest hanging fruit. So they'll go after, say, an elephant. But once they find a way to ban that, they don't just call it a day and retire and, you know, have their retirement parties, get their golden watches. No, they move on to the next one to raise money off of that one. So it's foolish to think that it's like, yeah, I'm a hunter, but I hate that.
Yeah, well, and that's when they came to Texas with the Texans for Mountain Lions thing about 18 months ago. The low-hanging fruit is mountain lions, right, for Texas. Okay, so you have a problem with harvesting, killing mountain lions. And then we find out, they've got some anti-trapping sentiments in there. And then I found out last week, Texas Parks and Wildlife sent out this press release that they're, and this just is just a perfect example of how when they get in their foot in the door, which is why they did this whole thing. Like now they have Texas Parks and Wildlife's ear because I just got this notification that Texas Parks and Wildlife is implementing 36-hour mandatory trap check on mountain lions. The trappers I know are already checking their traps every 36 hours. It just pissed me off because I was like, okay, this is the beginning. They went and they did all, made this big stink, went to Austin. They spoke there. I went to speak against them, but they got a little bit of traction.
Yep.
And so then that's just how they do it. And they're well organized and they're always well funded, which is why I encourage folks to join SCI, join SCI and join a couple others. It's not, the embassy isn't free. Ben has to make a living too. He has a family.
Help me.
Yeah. But if we didn't have someone in DC, an organization like SCI fighting for our rights, I mean, we'd be screwed. There's no other way around it.
Well, the attacks just come at so many different angles. And I think the one thing, you know, we do at SCI is take it head on in every sort of arena where it plays out. So if it's, you know, in DC, at the federal level, in the states, legal, you know, we try to head it off. Because, I mean, that's the thing is it without having like a watchman, you know, watchwoman, you just have some of these attempts just go through unchecked, you know, no friction. So we bring the friction, bring the facts.
And also legal fees aren't cheap. So
no. I mean, that's, the business of our business at SCI is advocacy, right? Yeah. That's why we make such a big deal about the Hunter's Embassy.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. I can't wait to come and see the embassy myself. Send me the link so we can get the word out and send one hunter, conservationist, young person to the embassy on SCI's dime. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
May 9th. So, yep.
Love it. Appreciate it. I'm going to be in San Antonio on June 29th for the grand opening of our building.
Should well, hell yeah.
That Lone
Maybe
Star.
I should be there too.
Heck yeah.
So that's the headquarters. That's the new SCI headquarters.
That's our business center, our business and management center, or our business and membership center.
Okay. Yeah, I'd heard about that, but I didn't know that's when the grand opening was. So June 29th.
Yeah, you should have gotten it, but I'll make sure that you get it. But yeah, June 29th.
Okay.
It's going to be a big one.
Yeah.
Texas style.
Yeah. Well, we are glad to have SCI in Texas, no doubt about that. But SCI is everywhere. That's just a building.
Exactly.
All right, buddy. Well, awesome. I appreciate you.
Likewise.
Always great catching up. Take care.
Yep. Safe travels to Argentina. Thanks, Cable.
All right.
See ya.
So there he goes, our good friend Ben Cassidy of SCI, Executive Vice President of Government Affairs. Always great checking in with Ben. So knowledgeable, so passionate about what he does. I don't know. Maybe you're feeling inspired by today's conversation. You want to get involved with SCI. You can do that by heading over to safariclub.org. Unfortunately, that is going to do it for today's presentation. Hope you enjoyed this installment of Campfire Conversations. Until next time, I'm Cable Smith saying, y'all have a great week in the outdoors.
Bob Wills was a hero to us all. When we were raising cane and swapping salt.